The theme for this evening's talk is the wisdom of connection. Sometimes I feel a little concern for our children in the classrooms of schools. And it seems to be, and it starts with, from the top, of course, with the politicians and the educators and the parents as well, of the situation of putting an increasing amount of pressure on the minds of the young. And that increasing degree of pressure takes place goes rather deeply into their psyche, into their mental life, into their emotional life. And though the great majority of teachers, and some of you in the hall here are teachers working in classrooms with children, doing very best for children, I think there are pressures and forces which are taking place which make it very hard for all concerned in those environments. And one of the outcomes of that which is being noticed and observed in the European Union, with its 250-300 million people in it, that the consequences, both physical and mental, and at the mental, emotional level, that more and more children, and it's gone past the 50% mark, are reporting the degree of stress they experience as children in the school area. And this, of course, generates its own unhappiness, its own competitiveness, and a kind of system that takes place of winners and losers, those who are successful with their exams and results, and those who are not. And it seems that one of the influences that's contributing, apart from the pressures to do well in school in order to do well in university, in order to get a good job, is also what is taking place as well in the home life. And what is being shown for many young people, teenagers and those in very small ages, is that what was a bedroom just a generation ago is now becoming a leisure centre, with all sorts of games and sophisticated equipment and computer outlets and Nintendo, etc., occupying the minds of the young more and more and more. And that's having an impact on the brain cells, which has its consequence, an impact on sleeping patterns. And one of the other aspects at the physical level, that children are eating more and more junk food, and the result of that is leaning and tendencies towards obesity, weight problems, lack of exercise, etc. And it's not just a few children who are caught up in this terrible syndrome, but hundreds of thousands of children are caught up in it. And with the reduction in sleep hours, with all the activity that's going on, and then some of the children, as they enter into teenage years, are then getting involved with the net and with these chat lines that take place, where somebody can, and you will know this as well, can communicate with anybody else, remain anonymous there, which can give some safety, providing the person keeps it, but can enter into any kind of identity and make all sorts of claims about herself, himself, age, gender, interest, make up a kind of pseudo-personality. And what's being reported more and more as the outcome of all of this, that in young people's personal lives, there's more problems and issues around identity. Because if one's spending hours every week in a pseudo-identity to impress somebody else on the chat line, and then one is coming back into the kind of reality of who one is, it's generating more and more psychological problems. And sociologists and psychologists and social workers and parents and friends finding more and more distress taking place, in which the world of who I am and what I am is becoming increasingly more confused. And when one puts all of that along with all of the pressures on young people in terms of appearance, in terms of trying 10, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old boys and girls trying to look 17, 18, 20 through all the clothes, fashions, cosmetics, etc. It's generating a culture of people, not young people, not knowing who they are, trying to be something which they're not. And one feels concerned not only in the short-term consequences and effect of this, but what this is going to mean long-term for our culture and our society. Somewhere or other, children seem to be as much subject to forms of, if I dare use the word, abuse, to forms of manipulation, as we know that adults are in other ways, in other directions. Now think, our young people that you and I have contact with and connection with need a great deal of love and awareness and support because of the impact that's taking place. And if more than 50% of the children are saying in school, through any analysis of experiencing stress and pressure and unhappiness and resistance to learning and not wanting to be in the classroom, and of course the pressure on the teachers, it has to be saying something about children's loss of play. Something being lost about children's connection with the outdoors and with the nature, about children's diet and children's the joys of vivre of living. And this, the intensity of this has grown significantly. There's something about a loss of connection. And sometimes parents are giving their children rather expensive presents as a kind of compensation for real quality time with their children, and no expensive presents can ever be a compensation for real connection with the children. So when we speak of connection, we have to look, of course, amongst the immediate ones who we know and who we relate to. But I'm speaking to everybody here, not speaking just to parents, or I think three or four of you are going to be parents within the next few weeks, but much further afield than that. So connection, genuine deep connection, comes from some levels of awareness. If you and I, we can bring as much awareness to situations as we possibly can, from that awareness, then some connection can come, and sometimes that connection may show itself as concern. And I think most of us who are adults probably would generally agree that the pressures in this direction towards the young seems to be much greater than there was a generation ago. Sometimes when we attend to looking into the area of connection in Dharma teachings, interconnection is a very root or base principle that deserves our attention very regularly on a daily basis. And the reason for this is that from the awareness of connection, it helps to break up many of the divisions. Awareness of connection in the wider sense of things helps to break up divisions. You know, the most extreme example, obviously, has to be war or violence. It's the extreme state of disconnection to others. Disconnection also comes for us in our relationship to the way we relate to what we... to things. And in a culture that we all live in, which is phenomenal at producing things, to satisfy every single little whim and desire. Just a couple of days ago, Nina and I were in Terminal 4 at Heathrow Airport, which is indistinguishable from any other terminal on this planet. And one has duty-free. What does that mean? And then one goes into the terminal, and it is just full of things, where people's hands are shaking with their Visa card, an American Express card, with the excitement of going beyond the 20 kilos and having more things. And one wonders, is the person, or persons, us, whoever we are, actually connected with the things? Or is it the projection of what we put upon them? Is it actually what we invest them with? And how many times do we buy something, purchase something, want something, go after something, etc.? And it may not be that what we get is a very short-lived pleasure. It's nice to have. And then it goes in the cupboard with all the million of other things that we never wanted. And there's some loss of connection. And everything comes out of the earth. Everything comes out of existence. And we are just eating it up. And we think that what we want is something to do with the thing itself. But maybe, often the case, especially with all luxury goods, it's actually nothing about it. It's about what the mind has projected onto it. And it is no easy task for you and I, in our relationship to things, to really stop and have the awareness, do I really need this? Can I really stop? And so sometimes people can spend easily days in a meditation retreat. Not much connection with meditation. Incredible connection with fantasy. And in the fantasy, going along the lines of how nice it would be to have. And so the biggest fantasy which dominates Western life is to be a millionaire. Not in shekels. More than that. It's not enough. And the attention that goes with it is the feeling, if I have, I'll be better off. It takes an extraordinary awareness in our life to stop and to really question what is imposed upon us. Because having and pursuing truly show connection. Sometimes with connection, and I know it's an important one in various cultures, in religious culture, I referred a couple of times to 2,500 years of what? 2,500 years of connection. That means for generation is around 25 years, so it's around 100 years of connection. And of course, here you can speak well and eloquently of 3,000 years plus of connection. And those kind of connections, for all of us in various ways, can be and are very, very important. But is the connection one of acknowledgement and recognition and appreciation, or is the connection got something else going with it, which is called narrow mind, which is called the only way, which is called the longest, the best, the one which has the most people following, or whatever it might be. So in our looking into ourselves and looking into our areas of connections with life, whatever we feel connected with, how's a relationship to what we feel are connected with? This is the important point. If the connection is one of clinging and holding, it will be the expense of connections elsewhere. And this will make suffering. If the connection that we have, with maybe with our culture, with our religious tradition, with our family lineage, or whatever it might be, if the connection is holding, clinging, grasping, possessing, and the narrow mind goes with it, it will be at the expense, at the cost of other connections. And this will make for suffering. Nothing wrong with the connection. Beautiful, and it's a beautiful thing to acknowledge. Sometimes I wish our culture would acknowledge the connection that men and women, whatever it was, 50, 60,000 years ago, emerged out of the tropical rainforests, and that we felt a real connection as biological beings with those of the many generations who followed before all of us. And that our early life was spent in relationship to rainforests. And if we had that, then we might be a bit more concerned with the present situation of tropical rainforests. I think an area, land size, three times the size of Portugal is going to be destroyed in South America over the next year. So this sense of connection is a very important sense that we have, but it requires from all of us a kind of awareness and a connection that isn't, as I said, at the cost of connections elsewhere. Sometimes in connections, you may have to know English rather well to get the humour of this. Stephen, he'll get it. listening to Stephen speak to you in Hebrew the other evening, I thought his English accent, his cultured English accent, is coming right through with it. Very nice, Stephen. So sometimes the connections that get made, and in the course of things, one little change that takes place out of connection can change things extraordinary for a long period of time. And sometimes that shows itself in language. I'm sure you and I in various situations have said something to somebody, made a connection, we said something to somebody, and then that person has remembered that conversation and that connection, and it got passed on to somebody else. I remember as children we used to do this with stories. And then the same story, the same got passed on to somebody else. And then after half a dozen times, it's back to oneself. And it seems a completely different story or report that one had given. And after it's passed through various minds, so much has been changed. I know for myself, so many things people tell me I said. And I swear black and blue I didn't say. But never mind, mind is made up. And the stories go around. So in one situation in the long-standing tradition in Christian monasteries, where the founder of that particular monastic tradition, you know, you have some of you know, Benedictines and Jesuits and Dominicans and Cistercians, etc., etc. And they have their founders and who wrote the texts. And then the texts were passed on through the monks. And one day a rather elderly, wise person came to the monastery and said to the monks, "Look, over many years, only one word has to be changed. And after some centuries, the effect is extraordinarily different." And the chief monk said, "Look, couldn't possibly happen. Our monks are extremely mindful. We wouldn't make a mistake like that." And he said, "Well, why don't you just go back to the original book and just check?" And he went back to the... So they went down into the cellars looking for the original book that the original master wrote, and dug it out and came back and started checking every word with a contemporary newly written one to the very original one. And then at one point the chief monk put his hand on his head and said, "Oh no, the word is celebrate." Anybody not get it? No. What? Can you translate for us, Stephen?
Celebrate is the chagor, and it's close to celiba, meaning nazir.
So sometimes, in connections with things, and in our awareness of connections with events and past, that movement of the connections that we take place there, that it requires from us a real vigilance, and again, some space around the way we remember things, the way things are passed on to us. Because everything which is of connection has to pass through the mind. Has to pass through our mind. When one comes into a retreat situation, sometimes, as a number of you have reported, sometimes one doesn't... The feeling of not feeling not feeling connected can show itself both outwardly and inwardly. When it manifests and shows it outwardly, quite often the feeling is, and it was reported in the inquiry today, that there is a picture we have of others and another picture that we have of ourselves. For some it's everybody else can do it, I can't. It's a picture story. And the picture story has come out of a disconnection. And sometimes in just going into a small group, and one hears from somebody else in the small group, "Oh, he or she has got knee pains, back pain, wandering mind, is constantly self-critical, is finding it difficult, etc." That sometimes just hearing that another person is going through exactly the same things makes one feel better, which is a slightly peculiar pattern of human beings. We feel better when others feel as bad as we do. But it also generates and makes for a connection. Connections help us to deal with difficulty. Sometimes, when we're not very connected, there is a kind of distortion or film over the consciousness, and we're not very connected with others, others here, others in our life. So there's a lack of awareness which is the key for the connection. And then we are very vulnerable to giving reality to the movement of the mind and the way it interprets. Understand? We're not feeling very connected. We're not seeing others very clearly. We're not seeing a situation very clearly. It feels cloudy or it feels dull, and then the movement of the mind comes in from within and it views in a particular way. You know, people will say, being here, it reminds me of school. And if they're feeling not feeling very happy at all, of boarding school. Oh, going for a one-to-one reminds me of visiting the dentist. Or seeing my therapist. Or going to the doctor. Or whatever it might be. Or being here, if one's feeling in a really bad mood, it reminds me of people in a mental hospital. And the way they walk around, etc. Or being here reminds me of prison. Not that many of you have been in prison, but anyway, it reminds me of prison and the three of us are the jailers, etc. So when there's difficulty, the view of the reality comes from memory. It puts it onto the present, and we can honestly believe that that picture we have made of the present is how it is. And then from that, many subsequent mind states. We do exactly the same when we're disconnected in a relationship. We'll take one particular feature of the person who we're in a relationship with. Could be blood relationship. Mother and father are always popular targets. And children, of course, are mother and father. But it could be brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles and relatives, etc. And we'll take one particular feature of the person and focus on that. And that feature of the person becomes the whole person. And we think, in our foolishness, we are seeing clearly. But we've taken, it might be true, a spot, a stain, a pattern, a habit, something which we don't appreciate about the person. But if we keep attending to that particular stain, mark, whatever we want to call it, it becomes increasingly hard to see a whole human being. We can't see the wood for the trees. We've grasped onto. And again, in the sitting, walking, standing, it could be that in the time here, you have already picked out a villain worse than Saddam Hussein, who happens to be a relative or a partner or somebody that you know at work or etc. And the mind is just focusing on one particular feature of this person's personality. And one is having nightmares about this person, and one is having thoughts about what one is going to say to this person when you see them, etc. We get trapped. Why? It's not an authentic, real connection. We're not seeing the totality of the person. And therefore, it's the acknowledgement of what we don't appreciate, but to see the whole, to see the fullness of a person. If this change was made, anger would stop. If this change was saying, here is a person, And out of this person, there's this pattern and that pattern, just as you and I have patterns which other people don't like, etc. And we saw the person clearly, and we acknowledged that pattern or that obsession or that whatever it is we don't like as a feature of the whole person. We saw that clearly, anger would finish. Anger is not seeing clearly. Anger is taking up something and only seeing that. So when we're speaking of development of deep connection with life, past and present, if we develop that, if you and I make that a real theme in our life, it will transform our inner life. We'll think differently about life, we'll feel differently about life, we'll have a different sense of things. Just because we say life is all interconnected whether we like it or not. That is life, is interconnected. Sometimes on retreat, people become convinced that they've made a very karmic connection with somebody on a retreat, in the silence. The romantic kind. And so the number of people who are participating in the flow of the retreat. And then the mind, as it does in its sweet way, moves. And it picks out somebody who's completely innocent. Doesn't have a clue as to what's going on with the mind of other person. And when something is picked out, how easy it is that from that picking out, we start to make all sorts of connections in the picking out. That person and the other person find themselves standing one in front of the other in the food queue. And the person who's the romantic says it's a cosmic happening. Arrive in for the sitting, and the two pairs of shoes are close, maybe even touching. It's another cosmic signal of the fifth day, etc. There's a smile that between the two eyes that just pass in a small group or whatever it might be. Oh, it's obvious. She feels the same way about me as I feel about her, or vice versa, or whatever. So anything in life can become proof of connection. Two pairs of shoes just planted together is the signal of marriage and six children. The mind has an extraordinary capacity to interpret and view and make connections. And it may just be all upstairs. Or downstairs. You see what I mean? So, looking and to see what the inner life does, and to have with it, is it a connection which one is feeling? Is it a connection which one is feeling and putting layers of interpretation upon? What is one making of the connection? And so one of the precious things about silence and connection is, in the silence, mostly we have no idea of what's going on for others. We don't have their words, we don't have much of their personality, their communications, etc., to a degree. So it helps us to see more clearly if it's just human beings spending time together, connected together? Or is it what's also going on is projections upon others? And what are we making of those projections? Are we putting people into compartments? Are we fixing each other in a particular way? And most important, are we aware that we're doing it? If we're aware that we're doing it, it will generate a little space. If we're caught up in it, then it makes for difficulty. Sometimes in our life here and in our day-to-day life as well, that there may be a lot of attention given, and usefully so, to our connection with others. And plenty of you here, perhaps all of you, in various ways in your daily life as well as mine, where it requires from us a lot of contact and connection with other people and receptivity and attention too. But it's very easy in giving a lot of attention to others that one of the aspects of that is that we neglect attention to ourselves. And sometimes there is a view, if I give a lot of attention to myself, there's something kind of selfish about it. And sometimes accusations are made about people who come on retreat. So isn't it rather selfish? Or take the view that one is escaping from reality, or you don't want to live in the real world, or whatever it might be. But this connecting and reconnecting with ourselves matters a great deal. And the way that it matters, that if we don't, we will experience once again the impact of our tendencies generating difficulty for ourselves and others. Sometimes one of the common expressions of those tendencies is the wish to please. The wish to please. And so then we find ourselves in the wish to please, going along and trying to be agreeable to everybody else, trying to be liked by everybody else. And that generates its own dependency. And if one has a consistent wish to please, it becomes extraordinarily hard to hear feedback. It becomes extraordinarily hard to get criticism. It becomes very difficult to handle blame. And through the wish to please, and then we are not pleasing, and then somebody attacks us, criticizes us, condemns us. Instead of being able to listen to the feedback, what happens is we internalize it. And then we say to ourselves, oh, I'm hopeless, I'm useless, I'm worthless, I never do anything right, I never say anything right. It was a mistake of the genetic makeup that I was born, that I was born in the wrong place, on the wrong planet, or whatever it might be. So sometimes criticism coming from outside, because there is a dependency on being liked, we get the opposite, called being disliked. It meets with the old tendency, fear of being disliked. Criticism comes, the old tendency, fear of being disliked comes, they meet together, we feel terrible. We feel terrible. And part of our practice is learning to listen. Learning to listen. Not listening to be liked, not listening to be loved, not listening to be mega popular or whatever it might be, not to keep wanting more from others, but just appreciating the simple actuality of connection through listening. It's a practice. And therefore listening is a significant contribution to really finding in our life a genuinely deep sense of connection, which is underlying the world of praise and blame, underlying approval and disapproval, underlining being liked and being disliked, that deep sense of just the listening, the connection. Similarly, finally, when we come back to ourselves and therefore not reaching out, as you know from the immediacy of experience here, that again, with our working with ourselves and feeling a connection with ourselves, it may seem temporarily that we're cutting off from others. Not so connected outwardly, but just with what's going on here. If, this is important now, if in our connection with here, could this, called heart, mind and body, head to toes, could the feeling of I, the feeling of the feelings, the feelings of the body sensations, the feeling of the breath, of the thoughts which are arising, and the states of mind, be such that it actually reminds me of my connection with every other human being on this earth? Every other human being on this earth. That the feeling of I am sitting here, I am talking, I am listening, I am experiencing this posture, that sense and feeling is running through the lives of 6 billion people. The I feeling, here, I am here, that I feeling is exactly the same as every other I feeling. That's what we're talking about when we talk of connection. In Leviticus it says, love thy neighbor as thyself. Love thy neighbour as thyself. Now I know some of the rabbis says, oh, what this really means is those who are the chosen ones who have a covenant with God. This is a very naughty interpretation. Love thy neighbour as thyself. So if we genuinely, the deeper level of connection, really make a very deep connection with ourselves, we will know that as human beings, of all things which we appreciate, that which we most appreciate of all is love. More than things, more than privilege, more than anything else, the experience, the feeling of love. And since this feeling of I is the same feeling of I as all others have, that's why we're so close and connected with each other. Since we love, appreciate love, connection with oneself, the exploration with oneself, difficult as it may be, in going deep into that, will generate and help to discover what this love is and why it's so supremely important. It's not just a good idea. It's not just a religious view of life. It has its own power to it. So sometimes in the day, working with the mindfulness of breath, working with the body, you're walking up and down, you're standing, or whatever it may be doing in the day, and sometimes from within the sense, and the feeling of love from deep within just begins to show itself as kindness, as friendship, as warmth, as compassion, as connection, etc. I would say in those particular times when you feel that, never mind with method and technique. Don't bother with it. Just feel that feeling. Let that feeling run deep in the being. Because in that feeling, there is connection. It's the feeling which confirms connection, the deep connection. And sometimes it just arises spontaneously. That spontaneity can arise with the past, as I just mentioned earlier on. It can arise with oneself. Some people just genuinely love meditating. They love that aloneness. They love the silence. People, some of you love just the posture and the form. And sometimes the appreciation, the love of it is just so clear to one just to abide there. Sometimes the love of the flowers, the nature is there. Just abide with that love. What is the love with regard to the future? And I would say this is a very, not only personal, social, but global ethic. And deep love is a love which wishes to sustain this world despite its difficulties in terms of human and natural resources.